You are live with Get Connected. Mike Agarbo here in studio with my good friend Gray Williams. We are Canada's number one tech program, and we've got a great show for you today. We are going to be talking about robot taxis. They're here. Well, not here in Canada so much yet, but down in the States, they're rolling them out in different cities, and one of those cities is San Francisco. And they're allowing a couple companies to run robo-taxis. These are taxis with no driver in them, 24/7 now. Before, they gave them certain times they could operate in certain areas. Now they've opened it up. We're going to tell you what's gone well and maybe what's not gone as well. We'll also be talking about collectibles. So for all the nerds out there that have old video games, VHS tapes, that kind of stuff, there could be money in that. Old VHS tapes, some of them going for thousands of dollars, depending how rare they are. And from thousands of dollars, some going into the tens of thousands of dollars. And video games, some of them going into the millions, depending how old and how rare and what kind of condition they're in. So if you think you've got any of that kind of stuff sitting in your crawl space or your attic, you will want to stay tuned because there might be gold in that crawl space. Let's get into some of the tech news, Gray. A lot of stuff happening out there. Google DeepMind has unveiled AI watermarking as the pressure starts coming on. So a lot of content now is AI generated, whether that's text, especially images. What Google now is looking at doing is actually watermarking. And these are kind of invisible little things inside images, like digital stamps into the pixels of images that would basically identify that image as being created by artificial intelligence.
This must be like a much needed feature.
Yes. The human eye can't see them, so be clear with that. But I think it's so important, especially when it comes to politics, you know, as we're getting into some of the U.S. elections again in 2024, you know, all the craziness that's happened the past 10 years with U.S. elections and elections around the world, can you just imagine what kind of craziness is going to happen this next year?
Well, it's already happening, right? This sort of like coordinated disinformation campaigns. You know, a phrase gets used and suddenly it's being used by all the usual suspects as it's being spread out across different things. It's happening already. And we're already seeing AI-generated images being used as well. So this is like, at least two, you got a big banner on the page that says, this is not something that actually happened. Hopefully there's a percentage of humanity that will actually get it.
The tool is called SynthAID, and this, they say, is not a silver bullet for misinformation, but it is a start to start putting that into some of these things. So that when you see an image of, let's say, Donald Trump or Biden doing something, you should be able to tell whether that was computer generated, because it's so good now, you would not be able to tell the difference between a real photograph and an AI generated one. But at least if they're watermarked, that would basically give you that information.
Yeah. It's sort of the first line of defense, not the last line.
Yeah. So, I mean, in different jurisdictions, in China, for example, they've already imposed really harsh rules on, you know, this type of AI-generated imagery. They made it mandatory to label content produced with artificial intelligence. It's happening in Europe as well. Of course, the U.S. and Canada are always way behind. I can't believe China is ahead of us, right? You know how we complain about China all the time, the governments, and but they're ahead of us on this.
It's a little shameful. I think we have to catch up.
I think so. But anyway, it's a step in the right direction. Yes, will there be tools to take that watermark out? I'm sure. But, I mean, you got to start somewhere, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, speaking of AI, here's maybe a good thing that AI is doing. AI analyzed 3D eye scans. So scanning eyes in 3D. AI can actually detect signs of Parkinson's almost 7 years ahead of symptoms.
Really?
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
It's a type of 3D scan known as an optical coherence tomography, or an OCT. So this scan does like a 3D cross-section of the retina, the back of the eye, in like very fine detail down to like 1/1000th of a millimeter in less than a minute. And then using AI, they have inputted like literally, I think over 150,000 images of people's eyes to train it. And like I said, this tool using AI is able to detect Parkinson's years ahead before it even develops in certain people.
What I really need is an AI that trains me not to blink whenever they sort of blast that air into my eye to get that picture. So I cannot get that to save my life. I'm usually there 45 minutes just for that piece alone, and then I sort of wander home with my eyes a little starry-eyed in those sunglasses. If we do that, problem solved.
Yeah, they're already using this tech to detect diseases like Alzheimer's and multiple sclerosis, like MS. I'm blown away. I feel good when they use technology like AI for this type of application. I guess my next question, though, Gray. Okay, so I know I've been diagnosed that I might get Parkinson's 7 years from now. How does that help me? Is there anything they can do?
Yeah,
I don't know. Maybe there are drugs or treatments that can slow down the progress and give longer life or better quality of life.
And it's one of those things where with a diagnosis so early, you know, looking at it and saying, how would I adapt my life to this if and when it does happen?
Yeah.
It's a lead time, I think, that's a big help here as well.
Another interesting story, you know, the story of Pompeii, you know, back 2,000 years ago, Vesuvius erupted and buried that city under huge blanket of ash. They're now using x-rays on some of the bodies that were encased in this superheated ash to determine, you know, how they died.
I've been to Pompeii, so I've actually seen some of the excavated ruins, and this is kind of exciting because it wasn't just ash, it was mud as well.
Yes.
And so in a lot of cases, like these folks were like sealed right in, so being able to get into that without having to break that surface should lead to some really interesting findings.
Well, they found that, you know, they thought that these folks died from dehydration or heat, but it was actually asphyxiation. And they were able to use x-rays. Okay, we're going to have to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk about robot taxis. Would you get in one? Well, San Francisco is rolling them out. Back after this. You are back with the program. Mike Eggerbo here with Gray Williams in studio. Got to stay tuned. We've got a really cool second half. And this is interesting. I know a lot of people over the years, you know, when they were kids, they collected things, coins, stamps, hockey cards. But also there's video games and things like VHS tapes that actually might potentially have some value that could be sitting in your crawl space or attic. We're going to be talking with the folks at Heritage Auctions. They're one of the largest auction sites in the world for collectibles, and you're going to be blown away at how much some of these old VHS tapes, for example, are getting, like thousands of dollars. I feel bad, Greg, because I threw away a lot.
I almost did. I went back home during the winter and sorted out all of my old Disney stuff.
Yeah,
there's the five movie Star Trek collection before the Undiscovered Country.
I
three pins and a letter from Gene Roddenberry.
I have that, but it's in crappy condition. Like the box that it came in is all kind of mangled because it kind of, you know, over the years, I feel crappy about it.
Those were the movies that introduced me to the concept of letterbox.
Yes, yes.
Yeah. Why is there a black bar at the top and bottom of my screen?
Is it opened?
It's opened, and I watched each of the movies once.
Yeah, so mine, all the tapes are sealed, except the collector box that they're in is all mangled.
We should combine them.
I'm going to go see if there's any value to them. But anyway, we're going to have one of the folks on. His name's Jay Carlson, and he's going to tell you the value of some of the things that they have sold at auction. And video games, Gray, you're a big video game player.
Yeah,
like some of those old Super Nintendo cartridges went for millions.
Interesting.
Yeah. So if you have any of that kind of stuff lying around, you'll want to stay tuned. I want to get into robo-taxis now, Gray. We've talked a lot about autonomous vehicles on the program over the years. You know, where are the self-driving cars? Well, they've been testing them for a long time now. I know you know, some of these cars that are out on the road now, like Tesla, they've got like an autonomous mode, but it's not good yet. You know what I mean? It's not ready for prime time. But there are some robo-taxi companies down in the U.S. One of them is Waymo, which is a Google company. Another one is Cruise. They have got the go-ahead to do 24/7 driverless taxi service.
Huh.
So that means there's no driver. You basically summon it, and it comes, picks you up. You tell it you've got to go through the app, and it'll take you there. So some people think this is super cool, but there is a faction that not happy about it, Gray. they are trying to block the growth of these robo taxis.
Would you imagine that group's probably cab drivers?
Well, there's a big group of, and this is kind of interesting, and I've talked about this on the program before, Uber and Lyft drivers. They are not happy about this. But I've said from the beginning, it is Uber's goal to get rid of their drivers. They want robot taxis.
Yeah.
Yeah. Humans are just in the way. They're a cost. Right?
They are, yeah.
Yeah, it's not like that was no surprise. But, you know, unfortunately for a lot of these Uber and Lyft drivers, that they might be swept away because of technology down the road. So August 10th of this year, the California Public Utilities Commission voted to allow these two cab companies to run the 24-hour service. Before, they could only do paid rides at night. But, you know, these cab companies say they're much safer than a lot of human drivers. They've logged already millions of miles through testing and running the service. But again, there's humans that are concerned about the overall safety. Even the fire department, I guess one of these cabs had a run-in with a fire engine. I don't know all the details. But the government then basically went to that company, Cruise, and said, you've got to take half of your cabs off the road. But they're still going.
The big red machine that your machine hit is a sign that we need to take half of these out the road.
Yeah. So you know, the fire department, they're not overly happy either. They said they've had 55 incidents where these robo-taxis have kind of blocked their progress. Again, I don't have the details on what that means specifically, but yeah. Would you get in one?
You know, I would. Just to say that I have, and hopefully I make it through.
Yeah.
It's one of those things where, you know, I look at it and the parts of the experience that I get from a cab right now, the exciting, let's use the word exciting driving, the scintillating, entrancing conversation, I can do without those. So if I had a ride that elements that just got me from A to B, didn't have to talk to anybody, didn't fear for my life.
So there's a group down there called Safe Street Rebels, and they are protesting the expansion and rollout of these cab services. And there's one physical thing that they do. It's called coning. So they basically take a traffic cone and put it on the hood of one of these self-driving taxis. And that basically shuts the whole thing down.
You know, we're all terrified of Skynet, but a traffic cone does the job.
Yeah. You know what? And San Francisco's not an easy city to drive in. So yeah. I'm impressed that, you know, this is the city. They want to roll out this 24/7 service. But I imagine, for the most part, that these cars would probably be safer than human drivers. Because humans kind of suck.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, it's like, with all respect to our friends who drive vehicles out there for a living, it's a tough gig. It really is a tough gig.
Yeah.
And, you know, you're tired, right? You didn't sleep well the night before, whatever it is. Robot's not going to have that. Now, apparently robot's not going to get out of the way for a fire truck either, so...
Yeah, I mean, there's some, you know, I'm reading, you know, some folks that have had issues. You know, one guy was in one of these robo-taxis and it just stopped in the middle of the street and just blocked blocked traffic. It just wouldn't go again.
File transfer aborted.
Yeah. Yeah, no, exactly. But it's interesting though, right? Because it's coming.
Yeah.
Like technology drives us forward, so to speak, and we're going to see these in more and more cities.
Yeah, and Koning apparently as well. She had told me that there was something in San Francisco called Koning. This is not the group of people that I thought you'd been talking about. Very strange term, Koning.
Yeah, but even if you look at Elon Musk and Tesla, that's one of his dreams with the full self-driving software that they're working on. Like, it's expensive. Yeah. I remember when I bought mine, I think it was $10,000 to buy it.
Yeah.
And I just thought, I'm not going to buy it because it's in beta, and the beta it's in is not even available yet. Most of the features, right? So why am I paying $10,000 for something that I can't even use? Well, in hindsight now, I think it's like $20,000 if you buy it now. So it's like doubled in price. And it's not transferable. So if you sell the car, the new owner doesn't get it. They've got to rebuy it.
That's horrifying. I'm sorry. This is like the Canon camera where there's two models. The same model, with, you know, just a firmware difference. It bothers me. I can't deal with this. So I'm back to the Model T.
One of Elon's dreams is to, once they get this software worked out on Teslas, is to turn Teslas into a robo-taxi fleet around the world, in obviously jurisdictions that will allow it. So when you're not using your Tesla, it could be earning you money, and of course Elon Musk money as well. Can you imagine? You get home, park it, and then it just takes off.
Honey, have you seen the car?
No, it's out driving passengers around by itself. How would you feel about that? Would you, if you had a car and you could earn some extra money without doing anything, it's just driving itself, would you do it? Would you want strangers in your car?
My immediate reaction is absolutely not. Like, it needed like a full disinfectant run at the end of it. No, I couldn't. Changing the presets on my radio, listening to my radio. It has a radio still, I'd imagine.
I would imagine if it went into taxi mode, it would kind of disable a lot of the functions.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So that they couldn't mess things up. But yeah, like there would be a lot of wear and tear on the car. There would have to be.
And the change in the cup holder, gone. Absolutely not there.
Totally. It would cost me more for it to be a robo-taxi. But I don't know. Like, how much money would make it interesting to you?
Well, so this is the thing. Like, how often is the car gone? Is it gone when I'm like, I need to run to the store?
Well, I imagine you could call it back.
Yeah, but like, you know, it's maybe it's rush hour. Maybe it's on its way to YVR Airport when it's construction both ways, both directions uphill. Like,
You know what you do then? You know what you do then? You call another
taxi.
Yeah, you call a taxi.
It's the circle of life.
Okay, so you wouldn't do it because it's gross. You got all these strangers in your car. But how much money to overcome the grossness?
I say like maybe a third to half of my car payment.
Really?
Yeah.
So just a few hundred bucks a month.
Yeah. I can get over gross for that.
Yeah. I got to be honest. If it would cover my car payment, yeah, why not?
Easy. Yes. Yeah.
But I guess what you got to take into account is the wear and tear, right? Because it's going to be driving a lot more. So, you know, tires, the wear and tear on your seats and what have you.
Yeah. I mean, they could be considered consumables, and you know, you could expense them back to Tesla.
Right. Okay. We're going to take a break, and you want to stay tuned because we're going to give you information that might make you rich. You got old VHS tapes that are sealed or in like really good condition, or old video games that are still in the box. They could be worth hundreds, thousands, maybe even millions. We're going to be talking with the folks at Heritage Auctions about all the different types of kind of nerdy collectibles that could actually make you some money. You're listening to Get Connected with Mike and Gray. Back after this. You are back with the program. Mike Agarbo here in studio. I'm a collector. I have collected many things over the years, especially when I was a youngster. It's kind of slowed down now as I've gotten older, but I've had a lot of things kind of sitting in the attic, whether they were coins, comics, original comic art. Well, there is money in those some of those old things, and you'd be surprised at what some of that stuff is getting. For example, recently, a Back to the Future VHS tape, I'm going to say that again, VHS tape, recently went at auction for $10,000 US. Do Do you have any old VHS tapes sitting in the attic that are in good condition? Maybe even old video games? Well, we've got a great guest on the line. He is with a large auction house. You may not have heard of it, but they are like one of the number one collectibles auction houses in the world. They're called Heritage Auctions. We've got Jay Carlson with us today. He's their VHS and home entertainment consignment guy. Thanks for joining us, Jay.
Thanks for having me.
I just found it fascinating. I read that article about a Back to the Future tape going for $10,000, and it blew my mind. You know, I get it with like hockey cards and, you know, some of these comic books, but VHS tapes, there's money in those?
It's, you know, it's a weird thing to consider now in 2023 when, you know, back around 2000, we all got DVD players and tossed all our tapes and, you know, donated them or gave them away to family members. But, you know, it's a thing now that the rarity of some of these releases has made them quite valuable. You know, there's a lot of people who are have that nostalgia for those 80s days in a video store browsing the shelves, and so, you know, it's kind of a natural collectible that nobody ever thought would be a collectible. And so I think the rarity of the fact that we all just assumed that these things got tossed and nobody cares about them anymore, it's pretty shocking to people now.
I'm a little sick right now, Jay, because I threw away so many VHS tapes. Maybe they weren't worth something. Maybe they were. We're going to get into that, but maybe just give us a bit of primer on what Heritage Auctions is and what kind of stuff goes through those halls.
Oh man, so you know this place is one of, I think, the most magical places on the planet, just by virtue of the fact that some of the most amazing historical pieces, collectibles come through here. You know, I'll give you a brief rundown of a few things here. Like a few months back, we sold a copy of an early 1776 broadside edition of the Declaration of Independence that was printed about a week after it was signed in 1776. That sold for $2.9 million.
A copy of the Independence.
Yeah. So after it was signed, they basically were shellacking them in cities to the wall so people could see it. And so this is only one of three that still remains. And I think if I remember correctly, it was the only one still in private hands. So it's like, you know, if you can't own the Declaration, you can get as close as you can with this one.
That's amazing. What other kind of items?
Just through the historical stuff alone, like, you know, the wallet that Wyatt Earp had on him at the gunfight at the OK Corral, his shotgun that he used to kill Curly Bill was another item that we've sold here. Davy Crockett's Bowie knife, a flag from Apollo 11 that came from the Armstrong family. We had even things as strange as like the fingerprint card for Jack Ruby after he assassinated Lee Harvey Oswald in Dallas. We've auctioned that. Mark Twain's typewriter we sold a few months ago. A shotgun that was in the back seat of Bonnie and Clyde's car after they were shot up by authorities was something that's come through here. One of the coolest things that I've ever seen in person, and I've seen a lot of stuff now here in my almost 2 years in the building, is we had a section of the wall from backstage at the Ed Sullivan Theater that the Beatles signed the night that they performed for the first time in the U.S. So like
someone took that section.
Yeah, it's crazy. It was like this sort of flimsy plastic, and somebody just, and it looks like they didn't take much care in doing it. You know, the edges are all jagged, but it's a section, and they signed it, and they each doodled like their face on the wall. And I guess that was, it looked like there were other autographs on there too, so maybe this was standard practice back in the day. But literally the night that they performed for the first time, you know, Beatlemania starting in America, like it can't get much cooler than that.
So Jay, literally anything collectible could have some value.
Yeah, it's one of those things that I think certain collectibles, you know, have been collectible for a very long time, and other ones are relatively new, like video games and VHS tapes. These were things that were, intended to be consumed. You were supposed to open it and use it and enjoy it. And because of the fact that there are so few of those that are still out there sealed up, it's created a little bit of a market for people that are interested in that stuff.
Let's talk about that VHS tape again. It was Back to the Future, fantastic movie with our own Canadian Michael J. Fox. And in the 80s, what kind of condition was it in and what version was it? I imagine they must have made millions of these things over the years.
Yeah, I mean, you know, to start with, it was an insanely popular movie when it was released in theaters. So, you know, when it came out on home video, it was a big release. The copy that we had was a 1986. It was early production with the MCA home video wraparound watermarks on it. It had been graded a 9.2 by CGC. It was basically probably the nicest copy we've seen so far. And if the $10,000 sale blows your mind, we sold one last summer, another copy of Back to the Future that came from the actor that played Biff in the movie. And that one sold for $75,000 last June.
What? $75,000? So why was that one more than this one that just sold for $10,000?
It was the pedigree of where it came from. You know, it sat in the actor's drawer for, you know, 30 years. It was a very early production copy that he had gotten, you know, from being in the movie. They gave him a copy that he just basically threw in a drawer and it sat there for the next 30, 35 years.
Was it shrink wrapped?
It was still in the shrink wrap, never used. He never opened it and watched it.
Oh my God. $75,000 for a VHS tape. And so, I mean, your job, there's so many different collectibles like comics and coins and clocks and, I mean, the sky's the limit. And your job is like VHS tapes. Is there that many out? Is there that many out there? Is there that big enough of a collectible market?
Well, you know, the rarity of some of these things is pretty shocking. You know, there's certain early tapes that we don't even know if there's a first release shrink wrapped copy still in existence. You know, movies like Alien had a 1980 release. We've never seen a sealed copy of that. The original Halloween VHS, we don't know if there's an original copy of that that came out in 1978. That was at the very beginning of home video. So there's some of these things are so rare that, you know, we don't know if there's a sealed example of it out there still. And you know, meanwhile, there's some sealed copies of other popular movies and they demand a premium at this point because there's just so few of them out there.
What kind of prices are we talking? You know, we talked about obviously some of the big ones like $10,000 and $75,000. Like, what are some of the average ones going for?
I mean, you know, you can find like first release copies of like movies like Beverly Hills Cop for $500. We've sold some of those in auction, and you know, a lot of there's some top tier tapes that will reach five figures. There was a copy of Star Wars that sold I think for over $100,000. The first retail release from 1982. So they can go really high or, you know, there's a lot of them that you can land in the $300 to $500 range too, that are popular movies from the mid 80s.
I can just imagine there's a lot of people out there listening that in their attic or garage, they've got some tub full of these tapes, these old tapes, and some of them might not have ever been opened and they don't even realize the value.
Yeah, for sure. I've talked to you know, we've gotten consignments from a few people. We had a copy of the 1982 Rocky in our February auction, first release, and it sold for I think $19,000.
Oh my God!
And that was a copy that somebody had found at a Goodwill outlet in Florida for 49 cents. They bought it 2 weeks before they reached out to me with it.
Shut up. Shut up. 49 cents.
49 cents. They bought that and Rocky II, both factory sealed 1982 copies of the movie. You know, and at that point, those were the earliest two copies of Rocky and Rocky II we'd ever seen.
What about all those old Disney VHS tapes?
So Disney's a little bit of a strange one because Disney's marketing was so good back in the home video days that there's still so many sealed copies of those tapes out there. Seven out of the top 10 most produced VHS tapes of all time are Disney animated movies. With like number 1, 2, and 3 are like The Lion King with 32 million copies, Snow White with like 28 million, and Aladdin with like, you know, 28 million. They were very effective with their marketing of advertising that, you know, they would only be available for a limited time, and then they would take it out of print and put it back in the vault. And people would rush out in droves to buy those movies when they announced that they were coming out. And then, you know, as a result, the Disney stuff typically that was released on home video between like 1980 and 1986, those tapes can be somewhat scarce and can go for a little bit of money. But the stuff produced after that, when they really kicked in with their marketing, like there's a lot of them still out there. They might be worth about $20 sealed for a lot of those Disney animated movies. It's a misconception that a lot of people have that Disney tapes are valuable, but you know, they're one of the few that you can still find at a good price.
Yeah, because there were so many made, right?
Exactly.
We're talking with Jay Carlson right now. He is with Heritage Auctions, and I wanted to bring him on because I know a lot of listeners out there, they probably have some of these old collectibles, whether they know they're collectibles or not, kind of sitting in their garage or their attic, whether they're VHS tapes or even video games. Jay, I'm going to get you to hold on the line because I want to go through the process of what it takes to actually kind of get a valuation and even talk about some old video games, because I know there's tons of those out there as well. You're listening to Get Connected here on the Chorus Radio Network. We will be back after this. You are back with the program. Really interesting topic right now. It's around collectibles, nerdy stuff like comic books, VHS tapes, believe it or not, or even video games. We've got Jay Carlson on the line from Heritage Auctions, one of the biggest auction sites in the world for anything collectible and much more. Thanks for joining us again, Jay.
Oh, thanks for having me.
So, you know, we've talked about these VHS tapes going for hundreds of dollars, up to $75,000. What about video games as well? I mean, you know, we've seen some of these Super Nintendo Mario cartridges go for a lot of money, too.
Yeah, for sure. Like, you know, everybody, you know, is or many people are aware of the Super Mario 64 copy that sold here at Heritage a few years back. For it ended up selling for $1.5 million.
Shut up. $1.5 million.
$1.5 million. That, you know, clearly set the record. But, you know, the video game category had been on a rise since then, because I believe shortly before that there was an early copy of Super Mario Brothers that was still sealed that had sold for around $660,000. And so it was just, you know, this progression of things that just really it snowballed fast with video games.
So, again, I know there's a lot of listeners going, I think I have some, you know, older stuff, you know, sitting in my attic or crawl space or what have you. What should they look for when they're going through their collection? Like, what would be a clue that it might have some value?
I mean, for things like video games and VHS tapes, age is you know, a great indicator. Popularity of a title is something that's always in consideration. Condition, obviously, is important as well. You know, there's a multitude of factors, and depending on the right things lining up, you know, you could have a very expensive item.
I guess it helps if it's still sealed as well, like in shrink wrap or hasn't been opened. That would be a major thing, right?
That's a major thing. Yeah. So far for VHS tapes, we're doing sealed tapes. You know, there's a very limited numbers of these things. And, you know, just like, you know, video games started the same way, they were doing sealed, and grading companies are now doing what's called complete in box. They call it CIB. And even some of those, like we sold a copy of Super Mario Brothers last year that was an early version of it that I think it ended up fetching somewhere around $60,000 for an open copy of it.
That just kind of blows me away. I guess people could actually start getting an idea just by even visiting your site, because you've got all the results up there for previous auctions, right?
Yeah, absolutely. You just you create an account, you know, with your email address, and you can log in and look at past prices that were realized. And it's really fun. Like, you know, sometimes I'll just be sitting around with my wife and I'll just start typing in random things that we like and we'll see what popped up, you know, and some of the stuff in there is just unbelievable.
So what steps do people have to go through then to, you know, get involved with you to kind of get a valuation of their collectibles, you know, whether that's a VHS tape or a video game or whatever?
The best place to start is on HA.com, and that's where we have all of our experts listed. So you can go into, I think we're up to about 53 different categories now. Of all different types, everything from fine art to, you know, historical memorabilia, to rare books, to, you know, comic books, sports cards, trading cards, you know, everything in between. You know, most likely if you have some sort of collectible, there's probably a category and a group here that handles that, and they each have experts that are very happy to talk to people about their items.
You've mentioned grading a few times. I know that's something in the comic book world, because obviously comic books, for example, are in all sorts of different condition. And there's these companies called grading companies. They actually, you know, have to mail your stuff down there, and they'll actually have experts give it a number out of 10, like as far as the quality. And does that go through like with VHS tapes and video games as well?
Yeah, absolutely. And the great part too is most people don't realize it, but they don't need to have their items graded in order for us to consider them for auction. You know, I talk to people all the time, and I accept VHS tapes all the time from people who have, you know, copies that are ungraded, we facilitate that service here, and we don't charge anything. And typically we get good discounts from the grading companies because of how much material we send them. So, you know, in all likelihood, we could probably get them a better deal on the grading fees than they would get themselves if they sent it out. And we probably will get it back a little bit faster.
So, okay. So they sign up for an account and I guess they send you some pictures and the description of what they have.
Yeah, exactly. You know, you reach out to the expert in the category that you're looking at. You can describe your items, include pictures. That always helps. And then they will respond to you and let you know what you're looking at.
So, I mean, there's other auction sites out there. Like, you know, the big one would be eBay. Like, what's the difference of putting something up on eBay compared to like you guys?
I think for us, it's eBay is kind of the Wild West in which you can put any and everything up there. We have, you know, curated sales of typically, you know, the best items that are available. We've got over 1.5 million registered bidders. Our marketing, we market the auctions aggressively. We can cross promote through other categories. If we see that somebody is in, you know, buying comic books and video games, then we can market to those people as well. There's just sort of a level of interaction with us that you get that you wouldn't get probably from anywhere else. And the opportunities that we have available to us to promote the items are, you know, pretty unparalleled.
So if you you know, get in a submission from someone, you know, they've got an old Star Wars tape that's still sealed and you think there's some value, what happens next?
So, you know, they send me pictures. I say, yes, this is a great tape. We'll walk through the consignment process, which is basically just, you know, a document, a consignment agreement that can be signed electronically on your smartphone. Once that's signed, we send you the shipping instructions and you ship the item to us and we handle it from there. You collect the check 45 days after it sells.
And what kind of cut do you guys take?
It all depends on the category and the items. It's negotiable. You know, most categories, you'll see the standard fees are probably comparable to what eBay is charging you for auctioning stuff.
We're talking with Jay Carlson with Heritage Auctions. They're a big collectibles auction site. And again, for any listeners that have some old collectibles kicking around, you know, we've been talking about VHS tapes. I thought there was like no value to those things, but people are sometimes getting thousands of dollars at auction. And video games. I mean, there's so many old video games out there. And I can imagine there's just a lot still sitting in attics or crawl spaces that might be in great condition and actually worth something. Jay, I got to thank you again for coming on the program and just letting our listeners know there might be gold in that crawl space.
Yeah, absolutely. I'd love to talk to you again anytime.
That was Jay Carlson from Heritage Auctions. Again, if you've got collectibles, you might be surprised at how much they will be worth. That's all the time we have left for Get Connected. I want to thank my good friend and co-host, Gray Williams, for again joining me on the program. Don't forget to listen to our sister show. It's called The App Show. It's on every Sunday here across the Chorus Radio Network, and we've got a great program this week coming up, so you'll want to stay tuned. We're going to get some really good roundups of all the latest in AI stories, and there's some feel-good ones. There's a baby app cry translator. It'll tell you why your baby's crying, and it's spookily accurate, apparently. We'll also be chatting about a Regina woman who's had a stroke and using AI and a brain implant is able to get her voice back. I'm blown away by some of these advancements. And the technology behind, you know, using AI to detect COVID is now being used for other diseases as well. And we'll tell you how that all operates. And would you get in a plane that's flown by a robot? We've talked about getting into robot taxis, but would you get into a plane? Well, Carmi Levy's going to be joining us, and you'll be surprised by his answer. That's all the time we have left. We'll see you again next time.